just the case that introduced that previous condition as dangerous driving to future defendants. Otherwise, they could introduce it to a future defendant in the DUI also, even though the defendant was stipulated that he had, in fact, been convicted of a prior crime.
Well, now that raises an interesting question, Now, those are the only two instances that would result in an enhanced
right. And you would also include, say, in subject employee with traffic training.
Then describing, and how do you know what is now then describing the first or second degree? Now, how is that in the present now? How does that just put the place out?
An analogy which is not particularly apt, but which even can be used in Noah, so that people are going to tend to do this, is compare dangerous driving in the first degree to reckless driving, dangerous driving in the second degree to careless driving. That is not necessarily an actual comparison measure. But I think that people will tend to do that. I would stick it in as 137A, simply to say that it would be safe to allow Chapter 44 to deal with procedures related to traffic offenses, but it really relates to Section 134.
The thing about relying on the two and two, so we talked about impeaching the credibility of the defendant. Insofar as the veracity of the witness, or are we trying to bring in some kind of particular scheme or plan of action?
Well, it would be to impeach the credibility of the
witness. As a witness?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that could be quite an option.
So then I have a second question. We think that this matter cannot be stipulated before the court.
Yeah.
It has to be stipulated prior to trial. If there are no mechanical errors, the stipulation cannot be made or destroyed by the criminal defense counsel. So the defense in this case regards the stipulation of the jurisdiction of the court and not given after.
That could be done in open court, but not before the jury.
Would that be prior to the trial?
Yeah.
I never had trouble as a driver before. and they teach you when you are not by showing your past, you have that trouble in the job.
Yeah, it would be a big thing to ask. It would be a big thing to ask. It would be a big thing to ask. Most of the finance study I've been doing is really fun before.
My conviction of a VBR under the existence of the old code, yeah.
You've got a loud enough lawyer, if he blurts it out, you know how to secure it, he's stuck with it.
that unless the defendant introduces it himself, the subject, it can't get in. There is now the state, when the defendant comes on, if the defendant has been convicted of some sort of crime, usually relevant to this, like he's on the drinking charges and convicted of drinking, or he's violating the basic rule, that sort of stuff, and they can say, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And if he has to be truthful, they have to say yes or no. And then they can ask him the details about it. You know? Well, that's my thing now. My amendment would prohibit. The DA shouldn't ask,
you shouldn't ask him a question.
If he volunteered it, then he opens the door.
Madam Chairman, it appears to me the way John has written subsection 2 now, it would permit the use of the charge offense for two different purposes. One is general impeachment, and the other is in response to the specific spirit declaration on the part of the defendant concerning the corporate conflict. The way I read John Jones, I don't know if I'm not sure what you say, but it would appear to me that the use of that conviction for either purpose, and if that is not what John intended, you'll have to write a far more explicit subsection too, that says, in the event the defendant claims to not have been convicted on a prior occasion, he may be induced by truth about prior conviction and not otherwise. That's what you'd have to say, and there is a limit of that now. Otherwise, the general rule of evidence is to make use of this conviction. If it's a conviction, assuming that it's, it's valid from the prior court, if it's convicted, it's not a
conviction.
Well, as I understand what some of the court records do, it would be necessary to amend that section 2 and it's supposed to amend that it's not a medical competence. The court has said that it's not. Thank you. avoid the use for any purpose of the prior convictions within 134 as a basis for this particular proceeding.
Now, I want all, let's say misdemeanors. What if we said that evidence of any kind other than a felony? Now, that would get away from your objection, wouldn't it? In other words,
the committee may very well wish to address themselves to the policy question, but I think they're deciding whether or not it would become a duty to the evidence.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. Now, in this case, what I'm trying to get down here is, let me make the motion. The motion is that no infraction, prior infraction of the traffic code, are the equivalent crime before this traffic code has been effective, may be introduced for the sole purpose of challenging the credibility of the witness. Now that I think is what, just to try to get as much support as I can, that's what you indicated would be good, wasn't it, Mike?
No, you don't have that. It would be a mistake even to suggest that a conviction for a traffic infraction, not a crime, but it's a conviction for a traffic infraction, can be a conviction for it. That would be insufficient to the person who is not.
I agree with that, I'm saying, but I don't think that's what John is trying to get at here. John recognized that for the purposes of 134, you can have a traffic crime as the basis for the prosecution of a second offender or a second offender. And that's all he's trying to do. And measure under, as he suggests, I don't see it, but you can impeach credibility of the witness by showing proof of a conviction of a traffic infraction.
All right, I know that. Now, then let me make a mention. The mention I make is that no record of previous conviction of a violation of a traffic infraction or crime, either as defined in this code or as previously defined and contained in the law, may be introduced into evidence as far as this code is concerned, for the sole purpose of challenging the credibility of the defendant.
That would include DUI, because DUI would be an infraction.
good point.
Well, in fact, I would move then, in view of this, and to the extent that it doesn't consist of the motion that just passed, that we adopt the amendments prepared by John.
Preventing people from driving.
because they're apparently not kept in any of them, so that somebody could go up to them and say, oh, look, this was done so many times, it wasn't done so many times, there's so-and-so does it this way, and there's so-and-so does it some other way. I feel like these things have to be the law. And there is one other law on the book that I will have, 402-3990, and that prescribes a mandatory jail sentence for first, second, and third offenders who are driving without a license. It's 2 days for the first, just fine. It's 6 days, I believe, for the second, and up to 30 days for the third offense. And as far as I have been able to discover with people that I have talked to, we've had children killed, or wives killed, or husbands killed, those laws are not enforced. And if this bill discontinues that and does not put into the bill something that we can all say, this is what's going to happen to you, we're going to give you a fairly free ride just for a fine category for the first offense. Then I want to protect myself and all of you and all of your children against the possibility that that second offender is just going to keep on doing it and going to keep on driving.
Thank you.
politically now, if we're fully true. And I think Mr. Smith is talking to say that we have laws currently on the books that are fairly strict in these matters. And there's a fairly well-known thing that those committees are not in place. Was quite so as I understand it, really assessed my employment, and it arises out of a extremely valid concern about police harassment as people charged with relatively innocuous traffic infractions. Under the United States Supreme Court decisions in the United States v. Robinson, the Jackson v. Florida, and under the subsequent Oregon Supreme Court decision in Florence, in State v. Florence, an individual who is subject to a full custody arrest, that is to say, an individual who is arrested and who is going to be taken to the jail and brought into jail, is subject to a complete search of his person. And more than that, even under prior statutory law, under ORS 142.210, a jailer who receives a person subject to a full custody arrest is required to conduct an inventory of that individual's valuables. And the result of Section 143 and Florence and the other statute I've described would be to create a conflict in those rare instances, and I submit that there's a lot to be done with it, but those rare instances in which, in spite of the fact that the offense is fairly innocuous, it has to be through a deep traffic infraction, there is some basis for taking the individual into custody. As for instance, the right of privacy displayed may be sufficiently different from the physical description to suggest that you've got someone who is proceeding under an alias. And you may in fact be wanted, so that you're going to hold him rather than simply release him. And under those rare instances in which an officer can point to specific articulable facts that justify placing the individual in jail, I would submit that it's probably a good idea to conform Section 143 with present state procedure law and present arrest law in Oregon. It's for that reason not to be amended. But it's for that limited person only, and I want to lay special emphasis on the fact that the officer is going to have to be able to point to specific, articulable facts that justify taking the individual into custody.
Well,
That's what we ought to do. seems to me that the motion should be defeated. But I speak to Senator Roberts. I don't know if Senator Roberts doesn't hear it. I know he's discussing it earlier. Motion I made earlier, buddy, to eliminate Section 138. 138 would absolutely prohibit negotiated treaty. And if I think it's wrong, if I need to believe it. Motion failed by a vote of 2-3. Now the proposal is to add a provision to 138 that would eliminate the possibility of a bail forfeiture to a lesser time as a method of negotiating a lesser treaty. So I'm opposing that amendment because, again, it's the second line of attack. It seems to me that to do away with negotiated treaty is not good.
Let me go back to that one that we skipped over there. The League of Oregon Cities also wants to include in Section 138 a definition of district attorney, which would include city attorney and city council. Senator Smith and Carson proposed that Section 138 be amended to allow for a pretrial diversion in the case of a person who's charged with driving under the influence for the first time. This would be a situation whereby the state could agree to either substitute a lesser charge or dismiss the case, DUIL case, if the defendant, prior to any trial, would agree to go through an alcoholic treatment program and complete that successfully. Thank you. still be in there. The defendant would have to agree to this provision. If he did, then there could be either a substance method charge for which he would be guilty after completing the treatment or dismissal. And we could, as I say, I could amend section 134 to say that even in the instance where somebody is diverted for treatment, the second charge of DUIL would be encouraged to do a proper time. We could get around, we could do that. Section 140, 106 in the red book, still on page 58 of the bill. Jeff Barlow, a legal intern who's been working with me, did some research on this section, and if you look at 5B on page 2 of the amendment, he proposes that you insert after estoppel, which is on subsection 2 of section 40, after collateral estoppel, insert, nor shall any such pre-finding or proceeding be admissible as evidence. The reason he's suggesting this is that the bill as worded does not preclude the use of traffic infraction in some other civil or criminal proceedings simply for evidence other than so far as software works through the product. This would show that you cannot bring it in for any purposes.
Okay. I think that's a good proposal, in particular if you want to unclog the docket. In a traffic infraction. Often a person goes in on a traffic infraction without a lawyer because you can't afford to hire a lawyer. And yet if that infraction may have arisen out of an accident, he can end up putting himself in a position of great jeopardy without realizing it by entering a plea. And so if every person involved in an accident first went to a lawyer and were properly advised, he'd be advised, I think, to plead not guilty. Guilty or not, because of the tremendous side consequences. So I think it's a good proposal so that you can handle the criminal or the traffic infraction thing in one proceeding and let the question of a possibility come out in the first trial so that it's not being muddied up by a prior inappropriate or unfortunate act of a defendant without advice of counsel. And so this one will be.
I think it's a good amendment.
I'll move the amendment without the word such. I think that I like the word such, but the conversion in Roland doesn't like the word such. I think I'm granting. No, we can't use such. That follows the same problem.
No, it's all about not with such.
Objects to, if you look in some section 1 of 141, the language or to comply with any condition upon which payment of the fine or any part of it was suspended. They object to that language. They object to section 2A and B in total, but would not object to section 2, or excuse me, paragraph 2 of section 2. their first position is that they would like to see section 1 deleted, section 2, A and B deleted. Alternatively, they would simply like to have the language or to comply with any condition upon which payment of the fine or any part of it was suspended in section 1 deleted, and still have section 2, A and B deleted. And then the remainder of the section amended accordingly.
Various options that the judge has, either for
certain period of time that he went to deal with something like that. But you could get into some very difficult administrative problems to see where the hell is the money to try and pay you there. And if it's dependent on the person's conviction, that's kind of weird. And being really certified by us and self-defeated by a judge because we hadn't really changed the program and rehabilitation and the busy driving force, the driving teams, too, and whatever it might be, because sometimes it takes a little while to even get them into those programs.
Now, why wouldn't that same reasoning apply to the second group for them that can change? Why should there be a different rule?
I think if I have understood the proposal of dangerous driving in the first and second degree, then you can't
Thank you.
people in the organization, and they didn't want to tackle it that way.
given in earlier considerations. But unfortunately, specifically, 42477, which we have to amend it to minimize the patient that's hearing and attention to the news, and we will also need to get a housekeeping need, and then we'll say to 2470 to make it a change that we have done in the current
event. Okay, this isn't really stating it accurately the way it's written here.
Well, yes it is. It would need to be, those two sections would need to be amended to be consistent with the adoption by your committee of 80 and 6.
And so the effect of that would be that on safety factions, including DUIL and occupational license, would be available.
Safety factions on the DUIL is going to be a good
thing.
But he's going to
be getting off the patient.
Well, the judge can be different. The victim is a correct. The judge can say you can only drive on the job, Mr. Smith.
Now, this could come into play then on the second.
The occupational that we bring into would come into play on three or on first or second degree offender status. We would not be involved in occupation for the first DUIL. On the second and third, the provisions in 42477 which deal with how do you get partial reinstatement if you have more than one conviction of DUIL, would not be fully substantive.
We could then issue an application on the second.
Under the same conditions that we do now,
yeah,
we can get a recommendation from the health and
I was just going to say, the only time that you can get one on the second conviction to be DUIL would be under the third applied injunction. That's the only provision under existing law, and that would be made up to any
different why don't we provide that it's available and you're saying to anyone on the second time, you have to take that. What's wrong with that?
I think the opening would be a pretty strong, and we have already shortened the period that we're going to consider the second definition. We think this is set down to 5 years. And I think from that point on, if you get to second and third, that the provisions that are in 42477 about going to another house, being designated either as a traveling broker or something of this nature, enrolling in a program, getting a recommendation from another house that they are making sufficient progress. Every indication we all have is that this program seems to be doing a very good job of keeping them dry because they want to stay dry in order to get some type of reinstatement of their
life. I think the question is.
Yeah, do you have any questions?
I think you call it. Please accept my attention here. Please accept the answer. I thought about the mayor of the DUIL. The mental health people were feeling something like a crystal bone, deemed to be a satisfied inventor, because he just happened to be treating all of those. But he figured that he was back safe and driving from it. He wanted to be claimed to be a problem inventor, so he could go through the system and get so much that he'd get back on the job. Did he work that thing out? It seems to me that the fellow wants to go back to a rehabilitation program. And do those things, but he ought to be able to tell himself a common worker and not be telling their mental health that sorry about this 2 years isn't enough. And it seems to me that he ought to get on with the system.
How can they just have a rehabilitation program? Not a rehabilitation drinking problem. They might be people who have problems otherwise, but you still remember it. An occupational license with regards to an operator's license, a regular license. available only from first conviction of driving while under the influence of intoxicating liquor. The occupational license with regard to a chauffeur's license is available except when you're convicted of a major traffic offense. So what, as I understand it, the judge neither wants to do is to say that an occupational license, whether it be for a chauffeur's license or regular operator's license, will be available to anyone on first conviction of these charges, driving while under the influence, failing or attempting to elude, dangerous driving in the first and second degree. And that's what mean also you would have an occupational license possibility if you were suspended as a result of receiving a COVID death test in a DUIR case. Currently, you cannot get an occupational license if you're suspended for that purpose.
Anything? I'd like to move that occupational and chauffeur's licenses be available in the whole broad category, first and second offense. And I'm not explaining my motion, but that it seems to me we need to refine and define what we're trying to do. If a person driving hot under the influence, first or second time, could be sent to the penitentiary for 20 years, that ought to be decided in the criminal proceedings. He ought to be sentenced for his wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong. Serve a year in jail and pay $1,000 in order to find it. But I think it's a distortion of the justice system to sentence a person to all these side effects that may be gross in one case, let's say a truck driver, or an architect, or a farmer, or a rancher, who suddenly, because of this, who suddenly deprived of his livelihood. You may be sentencing this person to $100,000 fine. That he destroyed his whole living, he put his family on welfare, and God knows that. And I think that's the evil of God, of our present system. If we want to put the man into a fine, if we want to deter him by giving him a specified sentence, fine. If we think that we need to rip him of his right to die to work on the method of keeping him safe, fine. I think that should be up to the judge, as long as we leave that authority in the Department of Motor Vehicles, fine. But we shouldn't have this arbitrary rule that in one case, ask the person nothing, that a person, a house man who takes care of the children, I say, during the day, the worst that can happen to him is that he has to walk to the grocery store to get groceries by taking care of the children. On the other hand, you have a person who is bankrupt in his business, which involves hauling hay from Eastern Island and the Western Island, and because he can't get a license to do that. Even though history and everything else has indicated that he only brings $20 on the time, he doesn't bring $20. And there's never been any instance or any reason to believe it. So my proposed amendment would incorporate this to the extent that the occupational or social license would be available on an individual basis and would not be a part of the penalty of doing it. And it wouldn't be intended to interfere in any way and put any conditions you want to, as I mentioned, for mental health, psychological health, or all that. I just think that it should be something that is available under the right set of license than it now is to obtain such license.
Mm-hmm.